You're listening to For the Show We Go Baseball Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 71 of To the Show We Go Baseball Podcast. We have Ed Hand and myself, Andrew Parker, as always. Today's episode, we have Minnesota Twins pitcher Cody Funderburk, one of the better baseball names that I've come across, especially this offseason, and I think probably the best one we've had on the show out of the 71 guests. I think you might be top of the list on the baseball name. So, Cody, thank you for joining us. I know you're getting back into things. It's spring training in Fort Myers for yourself. But I want to start us off. How is spring training treating you this year?
It's good. First big league camp. It's a different experience. Usually you go over on the minor league side. But it's my first time over on the big league side and getting to experience that. And I know I was up at the end of last year, but getting to hang out with these guys while we're all trying to work on different things is a unique experience, and it's been fun overall.
I got to see you pitch one time so far this preseason. That was in Fort Myers against the Red Sox, and you're a lot taller than I thought you'd be as well. I think you're listed at 6'4", and I'm like, you almost looked like you were 6'6" on the mound. But what has it been like, I guess? Obviously, you said it's your first camp. After getting that experience last year, so I know it's a small sample size, but going into this camp, did you kind of take a little bit of that and be like, okay, I've been to the show, I've already made the debut, got that over with. Now I'm going to go into 24 with just a different mindset.
Yeah. Getting up there definitely makes you want to come into camp, strong and make a good impression. I feel like there's some things this camp I could have done better so far. And it's spring training for a reason. You're trying to get back in the groove of things and get your feet back under you and get the visuals of a hitter back in there and the catcher. But it's been great, and having that experience, I think, is gonna only help me, recognize some of the things I'm doing and be able to adjust and, start getting that confidence back and getting it's mostly just getting the ball rolling again is what spring training kind of feels like. You sit out for 3 or 4 months and you kind of forget what it's like. So it's nice to be able to step back on the mound, tinker with some things, work on some new things and just get your groove back, basically.
Yes. So first of all, you're the first person on this show that my dad has said, really? You got him to come on? He thinks you're going to be the next Joey Nathan. I don't know if you're the same type of pitcher. I think it's just because Twins and late inning reliever.
Yeah.
But he's a big fan of yours. So thank you for getting me my dad's approval. Really appreciate it. I was looking up your story through college, and you were a two-way player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did both. Mostly it was a hitter than I was pitcher. Yeah.
What position did you play, and when did you switch to a full-time pitcher?
The other position I played was first base. Being bigger and slower, I was left-handed, I was limited. So I usually got stuck over at first base. And I didn't stop. I became a full-time pitcher in 2018 when I got drafted by the Twins. I honestly had horrible numbers as a pitcher at DBU and even in junior college. And Twins saw something that they liked and they took me as a pitcher. And that's when I, became just a full-time pitcher.
I mean, as a kid, did you ever see yourself as a pitcher?
No, I was always a hitter. Even growing up, 10, 11, 12, 13, I always hit. I was a bigger kid, so I was always on the taller end, and being left-handed, on the mound, that always helped. So I was always kind of stuck on the mound, just being big and left-handed, but I could swing it a little bit. So I was always pretty much just a hitter.
Did you have any idea you were going to be drafted as a pitcher? How did they go over that with you?
So the way that we were doing it at school, if a team was interested, they'd, set up a meeting with you and usually up in one of the suites at the field, you'd sit down and be interviewed. And a lot of teams, asked me what I wanted to do, and I was honest, and I told pretty much every single team, I'll do both. Like, I'll play myself into one. I'll do both as long as I can. Or if a team wants me to just hit or just pitch, I'd do whoever drafted me, whatever they wanted to do is what I would do. And then I didn't find out I got taken as a pitcher until I heard my name called and they said, you know, I was a pitcher. But I told teams I would do both. I would do one. I would do the other. It didn't matter.
Yeah. So did you always want to be a ball player, or was this just sort of extra for you?
I mean, growing up, I always envisioned myself as, you know, a hitter, you know, pretty much like every kid in the backyard. You hit the home run, game seven of the World Series, and like you dream of that moment. And then I got taken as a pitcher, and it's like, this is not like how I've been picturing it. You know, and then for it to even get to the point where I actually get to the big leagues as a pitcher is like, I never envisioned that as a kid, for sure. Like, it was always erred on the side of being a hitter in the big leagues.
I mean, you didn't just get to the big leagues. You got to the big leagues, and for at least 12 innings, you absolutely kicked everyone's ass. I'm just looking at these numbers right now. 0.75 ERA, 19 strikeouts in 12 innings, 0.917 whip. I mean, what was that like for you? What was the promotion like and that run that you went on?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I had been throwing the ball pretty well all year. I just was almost in like this flow state where I just had what I knew what I needed to do each day to be ready to pitch. You know, when I got called up to the big leagues, it was on a Monday off day for the minor leagues. We were actually getting ready to go to the Minnesota State Fair. And that's when I saw I had like 5 missed calls from our AAA manager. And I was like, well, I probably know what this is about. Ended up being the call and then getting over there. And I think the biggest thing I told myself like on the debut and like just when I got to the big leagues in general was I didn't want to be scared. I really didn't want to look back on my debut and be like, wow, I wish I pitched better. I pitched bad because I was nervous or I was like scared to throw to these guys. And like I had seen all year in AAA, like I faced guys that had big league time. Some guys had a lot of big league time, and like I still was able to get them out, get them to swing and miss. Like what's like this? Like this isn't any different. Like I that was the biggest thing going in was I wanted to be confident, knew I could compete and look at back at the end of the day and knew that like I at least attacked it with confidence and intent. And fortunately the first one was good, and that, you know, and that kind of helped me carry it throughout that last, you know, month I was up there.
So I saw
here? Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna ask. I had a follow-up question to the question you asked, Ed. Yes. Do you miss at all the fact that the league has changed to a universal DH? Do you wish there was just a little chance? I know you're a reliever, so it might be hard, but you're like, man, I would love to just get in there and take one at bat.
Yeah, there's when they switched that over, I don't know how long ago it's been now, that it's just been a DH in both leagues. I knew it was tough. I mean, being drafted by an AL team already, like, really hinders your chances of even getting that bat. Last year, I actually got, while I was up in the big leagues, we had 2 games. We were winning by a lot. They were blowouts. And they were going to run out of pinch hitters, and they were going to need a defensive sub. So they called me down to be the possible defensive sub. And one of the games we were playing Cleveland, we were up like 18-2 or something like that. It was like 7th or 8th inning. And I was like slotted if someone else went in to go play first base. And it was early enough in the game that I was like, I might be able to sneak in at bat if I get in there. I didn't get in, but at least the thought's there for maybe some defensive time.
Yeah, I was curious about it because I'm like, you know, like I think like Adam Wainwright was one of the guys that was like the most upset because he loved getting in the box and just hitting. Uh-huh. And I loved watching him rake. Well, pitchers who rake too, I love that.
Yeah.
But I realized now looking at your stats from DBU and I'm just in at Mesa, I was like, holy cow, man, like you have to miss that a little bit. I feel like there's a part of you, it's just like, I think I could still hit. I don't know about like major league pitching, but like I feel like there's a part of you.
Well, that's what I was going to say was I could hit that 88 to 92 and then sometimes, you know, the flatter fastball at 95 that doesn't play as well. But, like, I mean, I was watching the Twins, our spring training game earlier on TV, and Jackson Job threw for the Tigers, and he was hitting 99 to 102 with a 20 vert fastball and an 86 mile an hour slider. And, like, I watched that, and he's 21, and it's like, I am thankful I don't have to try and hit that. Like, pitching is the last few years has just taken off in terms of velocity and just pure stuff that it's no wonder why strikeouts have been going up. Just, it's so hard to hit in this league. And I'm thankful that I get to be the one that's, like, making it difficult and not trying to hit it.
Just looking through your numbers, it looks like you've taken a jump every season. Speaking of pitching getting better. Is there anything, any piece of advice, anything that you learned that really stands out the most between what you were when you were drafted and what you are now?
I mean, it's just when I first got drafted, I was a hitter on the mound. Like, I obviously knew strikes were good. I didn't know how to make the ball move. I didn't know how to make the ball go where I wanted it to. I was always hitting, like, at DBU, when scheduling conflicted, it always erred on the side of hitting. And after 3 or 4 hours of hitting practice and defense and all that stuff, then I would go and throw a, you know, 20 pitch bullpen. So I wasn't getting that quality of, I feel like, work as a pitcher that I probably needed. You know, I'm not as talented of a mover or a thrower as some of these other guys that just naturally do it. It's something I probably needed to work at more. And just over the course of each season, I feel like the more and more I got reps is just learning how to pitch, learning my body, like, just helped me evolve as a pitcher. It was pretty much just a learning process each year to try to learn how to pitch and not be so much a hitter on the mound.
And I wanted to say, you're like, silhouette in the background is creeping me out. First of all, that's the shadow behind you.
That's, yeah, you like one, it,
but it is kind of funny. No, not you, Cody. Not you. Like,
no, my silhouette.
Yeah.
No, sorry about that. So I had a question here in regards to your DBU days, actually. So I know we've been talking about it a little bit, and obviously, Dallas Baptist, not like the biggest name out there, but there is some, I have been watching Derek Hall just absolutely rake baseballs over walls. He's a DBU alum, as well as, like, Poche's from there with the Rays. You have, like, Ryan Goins, who's, I think, a AAA coach now, or he's in a coaching, Ben Zobrist. There's Freddie Sanchez. There's, like, quite a few, like, good names. Yeah, so I want you to show some love a little bit right here to DBU and just, like, what it was like going there. I know I read a story that you did with Twins Daily about how the process was of, you know, you're coming out of high school. You didn't really have, like, a ton of offers. So you chose to go the JUCO route. Then you obviously went to DBU. What was it like, I guess, playing at DBU and, I guess, just what comes with it?
I mean, I can't say enough good things about DBU. Dan Fitzgerald, he's not at DBU anymore. He's actually the head coach at Kansas now. But Fitz was the one that called me initially about, you know, just interest and was the first one to contact me about DBU, talk to me about the school, and got something set out where I went on a visit, you know, a weekend or two later. And I had heard about Dallas Baptist just being a baseball player. I obviously followed college baseball because I was into it. I was looking forward to going and playing college baseball. So I had heard about Dallas Baptist, didn't know too much, but I knew that they were like a kind of like a powerhouse mid-major. So I was like really excited when they called because I actually knew about them. But I took my visit, you know, one or two weekends later. And when I took my visit is when I kind of like, just knew they were offensive oriented school. I was a big offensive first baseman prospect, recruit, whatever you want to say, played right up to like what I like to do. They like to hit home runs. I like to hit home runs. The campus was beautiful. They had a beautiful like turf field. They were building a brand new scoreboard that fall. Clubhouse was awesome. Dan Heefner was a great coach. I enjoyed sitting down and talking with him. And it was pretty much that first day I'd stepped foot on campus. I kind of like, I didn't need much more than what we had. I had my hitting school in the middle of Texas. We played, like our midweeks were Big 12 schools. Like we were still playing big teams, all without having to go to like a big university. And at the time, my personality, I think, was more fit to go to a smaller school like that and be able to play. But my time there was great. Like I said, he really likes to hit. So we hit a lot. And we worked really hard. I think Heath developed a really good work ethic in our guys. And he demanded that, 300 or 400 swings at practice, and then you come back that night and take another 150, 200 swings. You know, he really pushed guys and motivated guys. And I mean, that's why they're as successful as they are now, because he's leading the charge.
Yeah, you brought up a good point on, you guys are playing like, the Clemsons and the Texas Techs and all those like schools, like the Big 12 schools as well. And it's just like, it is incredible. Like in DBU, like I listed off all the alumni, like notable, like, I mean, Ben Zobrist is a World Series champion and all-star. It's like, everybody knows who that is. They probably never knew that he went to DBU though. So, it is cool. Obviously you're in Dallas. I did see a quote that you gave Twins Daily though, on that you liked DBU because you were still in a warm weather state. So is that something that you've adapted to since getting up to St. Paul and Minneapolis?
Well, I'll tell you, in my, my sixth or seventh year now, I've obviously played pro ball in last year I went to Kansas, but it's not, the Midwest cold. It's like 40s, 50s, maybe a little windy, but in my, 6-7 years, I've never played up in the Midwest during April and May. It always turned out like my first year I was an extended, then COVID happened, then 21, it was a delayed spring training, so we missed the winter. And then last year I went up to Wichita to start. So it's like I've kind of missed that April and May time of the Midwest. So that will be a change for me to try and throw a baseball in, 20 degree weather. I'm really hoping, because a lot of the guys been down here have been following the weather and know it's been a pretty mild winter up there. So we're all really hoping it stays that way and it doesn't end up being a bad April and May, like a really cold April and May. But it'll be something new for me too. But as uncomfortable as it is for me to throw a baseball, it's even more uncomfortable to try and square a baseball up. So the thought doesn't change. Still throw strikes and, attack hitters.
So did you grew up in Mesa, right?
Yeah.
Do you miss Arizona?
I do. I say I do, but I also have not had an Arizona summer in 7 years. So I also don't really remember what that's like either. But I do miss Arizona, and I do have an appreciation for the desert more now as I've gone out and seen other climates and other, different parts of the country. I do really enjoy the mountains and the scenery and some of the convenience around Arizona. I've been more on the East Coast myself now the last few off seasons, and just know that it's not as easy to get around those places as it is out in Arizona.
I have learned that. That's actually, I've never done, just about spring training sites alone, I've never done Arizona spring training before. I've only ever been to like Jupiter and Fort Myers and a few other spots in Florida. And they tell me that like in Arizona, it's like to get from spring training, it's so easy to like jump between them. I'm just talking spring training sites, but I know you're probably meaning other things as well. But I know Florida is just like so spread out. You guys got to ride the buses and everything. I heard Arizona is a little different in that aspect. So
yeah, Arizona is much nicer in terms of the travel. And just, I don't think you'd be bad if you're with a team in the Tampa area, because there's about 4 or 5 teams over there. But being down in Fort Myers, we have Boston 10 minutes down the road, and then the next closest is like an hour away. So maybe it's just the location of Fort Myers, which makes Florida feel like such a drag compared to Arizona. But growing up from Arizona, I played on all the spring training fields, so I know they're all 20 to 40 minutes apart. And yeah, that would just be really nice after a long day. Like today they just played over in Lakeland, which is like 3 hours. So you play a 3 hour game, then you got a 3 hour bus ride, and then you got to be up early for camp again tomorrow. So it's a little bit more what it's like in season though. So you do get that out of Florida travel as well.
Now, did you have a favorite spring training team that you'd go to as a kid? Because I went to Arizona State for a year, and you couldn't beat just having the Angels right there. That was incredible. But for you, was there one of the teams that you preferred going to?
Honestly, in spring training, I don't really have a whole lot of going to spring training games growing up in Arizona. I feel like around that time, it was always my like high school season or junior college season was starting. So I was always like doing that while spring training was going on. But like growing up before high school and all that, I played at Peoria Sports Complex like more times than I probably wish I played on that field. I played on Tempe Diablo a bunch. I think my favorite one, when I was in fall league, we played on all the different fields. I mean, they have so many nice fields. I think Surprise is actually one of my favorite stadiums. It's just really nice, really clean. That and the Diamondbacks Rockies one in Scottsdale is obviously top notch too.
Now, did you have a lot of family coming to see you play when you were doing the AFL?
Yeah. I think my parents were pretty much there, every outing I was throwing at. And then I would have like high school coaches, junior college coach come out, friends come out and stuff like that. It wasn't, since I was playing there more often, it wasn't like every game I was having people out, but there was definitely, you know, family and friends that were coming out to watch.
Do you come from a big baseball family?
I would say I made my family a big baseball family. Like, my older brother played sports. He, I think, played baseball when he was younger. But it was when I started really getting into travel baseball and playing, you know, in Arizona, we can play year round. So pretty much every weekend was a tournament. And it just kind of brought my family, you know, we're going to the baseball tournament this weekend. It just turned into that for 10 years. And then, you know, eventually going to high school and things like that. But I think I would say I've turned my family into a big baseball family now.
Now, I know that we kind of ride a roller coaster on this podcast where we just go random ways. So I hope you're okay with that. But
no, that's fine.
All right, cool. Was the first time you had ever been to Minnesota when you got there with the Twins?
My first time in Minnesota was, yeah, when I got up to St. Paul would be my first time in Minnesota. Got called up. They were in Rochester. And then when we flew back from Rochester to St. Paul is when I first time I was in Minnesota.
So I got a question for you in regards to the people there. So I went to the Super Bowl a few years back. I'm a Patriots guy. So I went to the Patriots Eagles Super Bowl in Minneapolis a few years back. It was a bad Super Bowl, whatever. But I'll tell you what, man, we went to both St. Paul and Minneapolis. We did like the Mall of America. We did like all the tourist stuff.
Everything.
The people of Minneapolis, just Minnesota as a whole, like are incredible. Like Minnesota nice is like a thing that I kept hearing. And I'm like, what does that even mean? But then after I went there, I'm like, dude, these people are like so polite. They're like incredible people. And then I go back to Boston and I'm getting like, you know, people are flipping me off out of cars and everything. So what has been your experience with like the fans and I guess like the people in Minnesota?
I would say the fans are passionate. That whole, section of the Midwest, and I guess Wisconsin has Milwaukee, but you know, the Dakotas, Iowa, like all those little couple Midwest states right there. I did the Twins Caravan where we went to Sioux Falls and Fargo, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Fargo, North Dakota. And you know, the Twins are the only baseball team within, I don't know, 8 to 10 hours of them. So that's what they watch is, you know, Twins, Vikings. They are passionate, and you can even tell during the playoff stretch with, you know, the streak on the line and whatnot with the 20 years of not winning a single playoff game or whatever, that it really felt like they believed in us in that playoff stretch. Like, this is a team that could just win a game, let alone, you know, probably take the wild card series. And it really, we really felt that, like, on the field, like, it was electric, you know. You could feel, especially after, like, Royce's home run in the bottom of the first inning of that first game, like, the passion and energy in the stadium was, like, it was crazy. You could, like, actually feel like the Twins fans were being, like, a 12th man and kind of, like, helping us out. So I would say they're not only are they extremely nice, but they're extremely passionate about Minnesota sports and Twins baseball.
Speaking of people from Minnesota, one of your teammates, Caleb Thielbar, is another lefty, pitched independent league ball there, went to college in South Dakota, I believe. What's your relationship with him as you're kind of the young up-and-coming lefty, and he's the veteran there, the native guy, and, you know, he's bounced around the league quite a bit. What's your relationship with him been like?
Caleb's awesome. He's ever since, I mean, even last year in spring training, when I was just a depth guy, I remember having conversations with him in the bullpen during spring training outings. And he would tell me, you know, hey, you just need to stay ready because we're going to need you at some point this year. And, you know, I didn't quite understand how that would all work out, you know, but he was someone that kind of believed in me and knew that I could do it. And watching him and his work ethic as a 36, 37 year old now, he's older vet guy, it's honestly impressive what he can do still at his age. We are down in camp in January. We're running, they increased our running volume a lot this spring training and leading up into camp, but it's mid-January. Caleb's down in camp early with all like the prospects and minor league guys that the Twins bring in early. And here he is, a vet, showed up early to camp mid-January and is out there. We were running cut 50s. You basically run down 50 yards, run back. And we were, you know, being timed. Caleb made all of his times, made every single one, didn't complain, showed no signs of like bad body language, anything like that. Just ran it, did it, left. Like a true, he's a true professional is what I would say about him. And I'm always picking his brain and asking him questions about whatever it is. But he's definitely one of the leaders in the clubhouse as well. So, you know, he's a great person to look up to.
I had one more question about another teammate, and it's it came to mind when you were talking about you guys bumped up the running a little bit. There's a guy who plays center field in Minnesota that I absolutely love watching, and it's Byron Buxton, and I want him to just like. I mean, when he's healthy, that guy is incredible. I love watching Byron Buxton play. He's probably one of my favorite players. Yes. So what is it like for you getting like a front row seat, especially like at spring training? And if you guys are intensifying the running a little bit, I'm sure he's leaving everybody else in the dust. So what is it like, I guess, just getting a front row seat of that guy and just how many skills he has?
I mean, as a player, it's absolutely, he's, you know, one of the best players in the game. Being in the big leagues, it's kind of taken away, not that you don't appreciate it, but like that stardom of like even having like Correa in the clubhouse and Buxton and Kepler and like being around them, like you really get to know them as people and just human beings. And Buck is my teammate, friend. Like it's, you think when you get up here that these guys are going to be like these big superstars and big wins. And maybe it is in New York and LA and those bigger markets, but I mean, Buxton's an even better person than he is player. Like he's a leader in the clubhouse. He's always talking to guys. Like, although we may not be the closest friends, like he still dabs me up in the clubhouse, make sure I feel included, make sure everyone's feeling included. And goes down to the depth guys that come over early for, you know, just to back up big league games and things like that. He knows their name. He knows who they are. Like he's just an overall great person, fun person to be around. And like you said, like when he's healthy, it's incredible what he does.
So Parker and I actually met covering the Woo Sox, the AAA team, and we're both pretty into following the minors, and we're always seeing these guys that, like I'd say Parker, like someone like Nick Sogard, who we're like, this guy's really good. How come he's not on anybody's radar? So for you, spending most of the season double A, triple A last year, who's someone that, you know, isn't getting the Baseball America write-ups, but we should know about them?
Oh, man. On other teams, I don't know, but I know I got a plus.
I'm thinking about for the Twins, man.
Yeah, I'm thinking about you.
A couple of my roommate, actually, Chris Williams, catcher, first base, DH. I feel like, gets not a whole lot of love and attention, and he's a catcher that last year I think he hit like 250, 260 with like 20-something home runs. He can play catcher. He plays tremendous first base defense. He's one that I feel like he doesn't get a whole lot of love. Another one is Austin Schoelfer, right-handed pitcher. He's like 5-7 sinkers, sweepers at like 83 to 85, 86. Like, really, really good pitcher. I could go with guys like Austin Martin, but he gets the attention. But he's definitely one I'm excited to watch because I know he's worked really hard from injuries and is coming back, hopefully having a full, healthy season. But maybe he gets already the attention, but I feel like I'm really excited to watch him play because I know he can do some special things as well. There's a lot of guys in the minor leagues, but those are a couple that I feel like deserve a little shout out, maybe a little love.
It's always good getting the scouting report from the guy that's, you know, you see these guys day in, day out.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, even if you are like a little biased, whatever, like your teammates, your roommate, whatever, but it's still like, you know, their names, it's like, okay, like I've heard this name before. Like, I'm going to remember that. So, Ed, I have a speed run. Do you have anything before I get to it?
You know, I think I'm good for right now, but I'm going to actually ask you one question to give you an idea of what this speed round is going to be like, because it's not as baseball oriented.
Yeah, I figured.
And I want to know, do you have any pets?
I do have a pet. He's not with me right now. He's with my wife. They're back in Connecticut, but I do have a pet dog. His name is Ruger.
Wait, you live in Connecticut?
Well, I'm from Arizona. Me and my wife, my wife's going to school in Connecticut. So with the baseball life and with her going to school, we, you know, kind of bounce around in the off season. She's been in clinical rotations. Right now she's doing a surgical rotation.
Oh, wow.
Or surgical residency, sorry. So she's kind of home base in Connecticut right now. And then I obviously will bounce from Fort Myers and then up to Minnesota at some point. But yeah, in Connecticut right now.
Gotcha. What kind of dog?
He's a lab Sharpei. We know he definitely has Sharpei. He has the curly tail and the, like, the jowls, like the extra skin behind his neck and in his face. So he definitely got some Sharpei, and we think a little bit of lab.
Is he a rescue?
Yes.
Yeah, we have a COVID rescue that we know she's part corgi and she's part chihuahua, but we know that there's some other stuff in there and we're not sure what that is. And one of these days we'll do the DNA test, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that's the same thing with us. Like, we keep talking about, you know, getting them DNA tested to see, but we just haven't done it.
All right, Parker, you're up.
All right. Well, that was a good, like, into it, but I did have, before we start, my fiance is a nurse as well. She's been in the field forever, but has she made you watch, or has she been watching like ER, Grey's Anatomy, any of that stuff? Like, and have you been sucked into it like I have?
I luckily will just leave the room if something like that goes on. She was on a House kick for a little while where she was binging all of House, but, she honestly doesn't watch too much, doctor shows or hospital shows, but she's really big into like crime documentaries and things like that too. So
I had to ask because my fiance is binging ER right now, which was like a 1990s show, and it's like she's just now watching it, so I get sucked into it sometime and I'm like, this isn't what I'm here for. But all right, cool. We're doing a speed run. It's off the wall questions. We kind of already hit you with it, but I'm gonna start us out. What's your favorite movie of all time?
Favorite movie of all time. I think one I just love watching over and over, and it's a classic, is just Pulp Fiction. I love a good Quentin Tarantino flick, and Pulp Fiction is just every time it's turned on, I'm finding myself watching it, and I think it's just a great movie.
Now, give me your favorite TV show of all time.
I think it's going to have to go either Suits or Game of Thrones.
A lot of baseball players are Suits guys.
I was just thinking,
you know, that. And I was on the train years ago before Suits came out on Netflix. I think I was watching on like HBO or something like that. I was telling everybody, I said, Suits is a great show. You need to watch Suits. Nobody wanted to listen to me. And now Suits gets on Netflix and it's another popular show on there. So I was on it before it became mainstream.
Okay. We'll make sure we throw that out there, but we've gotten Suits a ton of times. Like, yeah. It's crazy how many guys are watching Suits in the off season.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to specify HBO Suits for you.
Yeah. HBO Suits, not Netflix Suits.
Okay. If you had a walkout song in 2024, what would it be?
I think I'm just going to go with what everyone already thinks it should be, is Thunderstruck. They did that. When I was up in the big leagues in my debut, they played that when I came out. And I had so many people tell me to do it and that I should do it. But I was just kind of like, I don't want to be that guy that's like doing that. But I'll probably end up just doing that again this off season or this season. It's a fun song, good rock. I'm into rock and roll, so it just kind of does fit.
And people can turn it into a drinking game.
What kind of last name is Thunderbird?
What's that?
What kind of last name is Thunderbird? Like, what's like the origin of it?
German.
Gotcha.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was going to ask too. When did you decide to become a member of the All Lettuce team?
COVID did that to me. the beginning of COVID, my hair was already kind of longer, and they had shut obviously everything down, so I just couldn't get a haircut for like a long time, and it started growing out. And you know, thankfully we were all in quarantine during that, like the awkward length where it's like not quite long but not quite short, and it just looks kind of funny. And then after COVID, like we came back and everything, I just had longer hair. It was a byproduct of COVID and not just being able to get a haircut, and I've just kind of kept it since.
I think you're gonna start giving some Josh Hader vibes out there, the big tall lefty with some lettuce coming out the back.
If only I could throw as hard as Josh Hader does, then maybe.
All right. So next question in the speed run. If there was a rule in the MLB or minor leagues, and it's not the DH rule because we already talked about it, what would you change?
Drop third strike. I hate it so much. I don't understand why we reward a hitter for swinging and missing on probably a horrible pitch if it gets by the catcher. I think a drop third strike. I might be, you know, bias, but I mean, I don't think you should reward a guy for missing.
I like that question. And I like that answer too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of bring up a very good point, actually. I feel like some of these answers, it's like, you know, the pitch clock and all this stuff, which I get that.
Yeah.
But that one though, that one makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one. All right. Give me your favorite athlete outside of baseball.
I grew up a Saints fan myself. My dad's from Louisiana, and I loved watching Drew Brees play quarterback for the Saints. He was, during the stretch there when they won the Super Bowl in 09, just the team he had around him, it was really fun to watch him, like, lead and, you know, not be that stereotypical big, tall, strong quarterback, but be the shorter guy and still not be afraid to throw, like, air raids and bombs down the field. And lead a team, you know, and the city to a Super Bowl. So I'd say Drew Brees was one of my favorites growing up.
Nobody's going to argue with that one at all. What is the weirdest baseball superstition you've ever had?
Man, I never did anything weird, but when I was younger, I was super superstitious. I was to the point where if I went like 3 for 3 one day, like the next day I would think about what I would do or what I did that day, and I would try to do it the same way. I would try to wake up the same way, put my clothes on the same way, walk down the stairs the same way, eat breakfast. Like, try to do everything the same in hopes that I would, you know, go 3 for 3. But I wouldn't do anything crazy. I jump over the line still when I take the mound. Like, I don't do that. But it probably would be like I would try to repeat my day the day before.
All right, give me the weirdest thing you've ever had to autograph.
So I'll probably just be like someone's forehead or something. I haven't had anyone give me like anything crazy. It's usually just like the kid that's like, sign my forehead. And I'm like, I won't sign your forehead, but I'll sign your arm. Like, but it's usually like a body part, body item.
Okay. All right. We're getting into the food section here. I got a few left. Everybody's a foodie. I know you are. Even if some of the guys we've had on here on strict diets, nutritionists, like are getting on them. I get it. All right. So give me, I guess the first one here, what's the go-to pregame snack for you?
Pregame snack. Hopefully if I'm pitching, I like something a little bit lighter. I'm probably going to be very much like everybody else. Just like, give me like a chicken, rice, bean, like a Chipotle. I don't like feeling heavy or bogged down. I'm already like a heavier guy. I don't want to feel bloated or, you know, like waterlogged while I'm pitching and just feel thick. Now I really like it when like, you know, we get like some Chinese or, you know, some like Thai food, some sort of special food. I really liked when I got up to the big leagues when we were getting sushi before and after some games. So something a little bit lighter before an outing. Okay. If I'm not playing, I would definitely go for like the Chinese or Thai or something a little bit, you know, unhealthy, I guess.
All right, let's say we're keeping on the unhealthy chain. You're going to order a pizza. Give me two. There's two different answers here. One, what is your go-to topping that you're going to get on that pizza? And then what is the worst topping you could possibly put on a pizza that you'll never eat?
So I'll start with the worst. When I was in this off season, we were obviously in Connecticut, went over to New Haven.
Okay.
To try some pizza. We went to Sally's, I believe. And it was the first time I had clams on a pizza. And I was not the biggest fan of clams on a pizza. So I say clams is my worst one.
Hard pass. Good call.
When I'm ordering my pizza, it's definitely got to have like a spicy Italian sausage. And then usually like a red onion or in like a hot oil.
I can't believe they put clam. That's a New England thing. It's got to be.
No, it is. That's the only place I've ever. It's usually like a white, like a garlicky sort of. It's garlic is good, but the clam part not so much.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I apparently it was like their most popular pizza that this. We looked it up online. It was supposed to be a pretty popular spot. It was their most popular one, and I was not a big fan. It was very fishy.
I will say though that Sally's is the like highest rated New Haven style, but I don't know if I would ever order the clam one though. That's interesting. All right. What is the, so we're going to stick on the unhealthy here. You're going to go to a fast food fried chicken chain. Where are you going?
Fried chicken. I feel like Chick-fil-A is good, but I feel like it's a little overrated. I think I'm a Popeyes guy. I think I like a good Popeyes.
Yeah, you're definitely my dad's favorite player. He's obsessed with Popeyes.
That's hilarious.
So Cody, could I interest you in a place that's not too far down the road from where you're at, called Zaxby's?
Oh, I mean, when we were in rookie ball in Tennessee, we would crush some Zaxby's too. So, but Zaxby's to me is kind of like, it's like Cane's, and I have Cane's quite a bit in some of the affiliates we play at, and it's good every now and again, but it's not something where I feel like, oh, I'm going to go out of my way and go get Cane's or Zaxby's.
Okay, fair. That's fair. I will say one of our past guests on here, John Schreiber, who was with the Red Sox, he ended up getting traded to Kansas City, but he said a place called PDQ in Fort Myers is fantastic if you haven't tried it.
I've been to PDQ. PDQ is very good as well.
Okay. Well, that's all my food questions I had. That's the speed run. It went like 10 minutes. I'm sorry about that.
I got a food question. Because they don't – the thing that I remember when I was at Arizona State food-wise was it was the first time – because I'm from the East Coast. It was the first time I'd ever had an Out Burger, and it was the first time I'd ever had Whataburger.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the two, which one do you prefer?
I'm probably going In-N-Out. It's just a different burger than I feel like. Whataburger is kind of grouped into, like, you know, like the McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's kind a little bit higher up, but still it's kind of in those, just a fast food burger chain. I do like how In-N-Out, you can get it protein style and just get it like lettuce wrapped and still get the Thousand Island and things like that. But I'd say In-N-Out over Whataburger.
I've never tried either of them. So that's, I'm missing out apparently. All right, Cody, I mean, you've given us 45 minutes of your time here. We appreciate that. I know you're obviously, still, in camp, getting ready for the season. So, appreciate you giving us the time today, and we're definitely going to be looking out for you next time you're on the mound. So thank you so much for joining.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.